Hello and welcome back to The Dive, presented by Honda, Season 5, Episode 9. Happy Tuesday. I see smiles all around. Everybody's just in a cheerful morning mood.
It's Monday,
today.
Kobe. How drunk are you?
It goes out on Tuesday, you dumb. You got to keep up with the viewers.
I know. So you're saying happy Tuesday to the viewers, but you're not saying happy Monday
to us? Yeah.
If
I say happy Monday to the viewers, they're going to get angry.
What about European viewers who do watch?
Kobe, you know, it's like you're talking to us.
No, I'm talking to the viewers, bro. Okay. You're just a prop.
Okay, well, happy Tuesday then, viewers.
Yeah, he's on board.
Yeah, and I hope you two have a horrible Monday.
A horrible Monday, you mean to say. We're pretending this entire thing is
right.
being recorded
We're in
Tuesday,
the future.
Right?
That's true. Well, it comes out on 5 a.m. on Tuesday. So, you know, if we're trying to pretend that we're recording this on Tuesday, then it's like, this is the middle of the night, you know?
And you see, it's also PST with a lot of other time zones getting it before as well. Anyways, it is the last week of the regular season, and Cloud9 have been slipping. Let's get right into the LCS teams, into the LCS week, because Cloud9 immediately dropping back-to-back games here. Team Liquid, TSM taking them down. A lot of people looking at some of the Cloud9 drafts as they have been really flexible, you know, throughout the season. Have tried a couple of different strategies. They went pretty light on frontline this time around this weekend, and they had some pretty difficult opponents, and it did not work out with for them.
Yeah, and they had leads in both those games too. The Team Liquid one, you know, they have this insane scaling comp with Azir, GP, Caitlyn, and I think it was like a 2K gold lead before they started getting solo killed in side lanes by Alfari. So it was definitely not a great look. And I mean, I don't know if they're just trying to branch out and play this less like scrappy style, I guess you could say, with like a lot of high priority stuff. When I say priority, I mean like lane priority champions. I don't know. Because their other comp was 5 range, basically. I mean, Gnar's, he can go mega. But if he's not mega and not split, then you just are 4 range core.
Yeah. The clearest thing is that Cloud9 got some intel, and it was Sven on this Caitlyn, back-to-back games. And so they're the ones trying to push the new Caitlyn. She got some slight scaling buffs for her scaling stats per level. Doesn't, affect early lane phase, all that much. But my theory is that Sven still is one of the players that always has, a lot of communication and connections still to the European scene in LEC. And so that this has been the tie, like that they've had some Caitlyn over there as well. And it seems like Cloud9 is the team that decided this week they're pushing hard on, the lane pushing Caitlyn style. And they keep pairing it with, range supports as well to fully maximize, bindings into trap combinations, punish them under tower, push them down. What are your guys' thoughts on, maybe the next step that you have to take as far as implementing that to a successful level? Because they did get kind of their feet cut out from them a couple times in a row.
I mean, I think the lane went great, right? I think that they just failed to execute in some of the other stages of the game. I mean, the fact that they lost the TSM game was pretty crazy. Like, let's be honest. It was level 6 to level 3 in the jungle. He started with multiple kill lead. He got 4, like, Speaker got 4 buffed, and ended up doing more than Viber did in that game. So that was pretty insane. But, as a whole, like, when I was casting that last C9 game, and to me, going for, like, Caitlyn Morgana kind of reminded me of back when we were in the Ardent Censor meta, and teams were just getting greedier with their bot lanes. And then it was like, wait, why don't we just, like, pick Caitlyn and just kill them, or, like, take all their towers, right? And it kind of feels like we're getting a bit to that point now where people are going to Jinx, and people are going to, blind Kai'Sa first pick every
Vayne's
game, and Vayne's are coming in. And, like, especially, I just think Kai'Sa was never really looked at as one of the strongest laners. Like, Kai'Sa always had really good team fighting, but it was always considered pretty abusable in lane. So it feels like a bit of a natural cycle where it's like, okay, if you're getting to the point where Kai'Sa just gets first picked in like half our games, why don't you try to punish it? Why don't you try to go with a really dominant laning duo, especially when people are pairing them alongside, weak laners in a lot of these supports that are, these tanky supports that aren't really lane dominant. It's more about, their team fighting, more about the ability to roam. So I think that the Morgana Caitlyn, like, is a pretty logical, natural evolution from there. But they struggle to really make it work beyond the lane phase. You know, they got pulled apart in a lot of these team fights. Zven was always getting completely dogpiled on by the Hecarim and by, you know, the Kai'Sa is like an item down, but just ulting in your face and killing you anyway. So who cares?
Yeah. That's kind of why, Mark, just real quick. That's why I bring up the frontline aspect of it, because they don't have a lot of structure transitioning into. It's not just a Caitlyn Morgana bottom lane in isolation. You know, it is effective, super, you know, pushing down towers, getting lane priority. But they also, both games, you know, for the TSM one and the Team Liquid one, pair it with one of these scaling mages, the Azir or the Victor, that also benefit from that structure when you get to the team fight phase. If you're not overwhelmingly pressuring early on, and specifically in the TSM one that you're talking about, TSM are like, all right, well, shit, we can't mess around with this Caitlyn Morgana bottom lane. They're already too far ahead. We're going after Fudge. Keep this Gnar real mini. Starve him of gold. He's not going to be able to some
microscopic
function,
so they, Gnar.
Yeah, he's little tiny Gnar. They force him off the tower multiple times, and they're just like, you know what? All right, keep forcing plays. And as far as Spiko was behind, it was kind of cool to see. Like, you could kind of imagine the TSM comms just trying to, you know, keep him calm and like, all right, Sword Art's like, you know what? Just come with me, buddy. We're gonna go force a bunch of plays and on these side lanes on isolated members, and they just keep charging forward. You know, chem tanks always on. Hunt somebody down and not allow Cloud9 to, you know, set up some of this more flimsy but really strong damage and siege that they have. And then in the other game, the first one, they had Fudge on the gangplank. So, you know, that would require you being at the objective first. Mm-hmm. If you have Caitlyn and gangplank and you can set up at a dragon or, you know, something first, and you get to blow down traps and barrels, then that works fine. And you can have them, you know, come to you through all of this zone control that you have, but not being able to do that as well is pretty detrimental. And we saw how, even with, you know, really good late game and long range damage scaling, they just kind of crumpled.
Yeah, most of their setups were in the TSM game were pretty bad.
They're really bad.
Like, most people just ran
walking in and dying.
Yeah, people just ran around traps. People just like were dying before objectives came up. They never want, because like the when you have the four range, you need to get there first. You need to make sure you have the entrance covered, so they have to walk through traps. They have to walk through a Victor gravity field. You have to like poke them out as they come in, so they can't even contest. But if Spica gets to just charge in at the objective, you're not going to burst them down with that comp really, unless the Victor's like turbo ahead, and he wasn't really the one that was super ahead. And so they just never actually forced TSM through chokes and then punished them for it. They got caught in sidelines, like you guys were saying, and they just really did not play well on an individual level. Like that top engage where they black shield the Morgana and then they just ult on top of the Kai'Sa was like, hey, what are you doing, Vulcan? Like, you gotta black shield the Caitlyn. I don't know. There was a lot of stuff wrong.
Yeah. And then, so like the mini Gnar too, one where they're attacking Fudge so much early, he almost never has control of charging up his Gnar rage bar before TSM get to take the initiation. Because he's been pushed off so many waves, he was coming from behind trying to stack it up to even turn Mega. And then in the Gangplank game, it actually came down to some big plays from Alfari. Him solo killing Perks, getting the big gold bounty early, and then later solo killing Fudge off screen and being able to teleport in to win that fight is what actually brought it back for Team Liquid. Because like you're saying, Cloud9 did, again, you know, get up, you know, the nice early gold lead. Mm-hmm. It's just some definitely big individual plays from Alfari.
I felt like Perks had an awful weekend. I think that both those games,
even
were
the Aurelia
terrible.
Game, could be a little sus without that bug or whatever it was.
It's hard to know how it would have looked, right? But I mean, that game at least, you know, ended up he got strong. But like, both the Azir game and the Victor game were really bad, really, really bad. I mean, even just some of the early plays and stuff, like there was that the one kind of ultimate he tried to go for mid lane pretty early on where he just like dove in and like no one was behind him and he just like his team just like, oh, well, I guess you're dead. Just leave him. He scoops him back and then just immediately gets killed. The solo kill or whatever that Alfari had was like the most garbage solo kill ever. Perks just kind of like walked into him and then just like stood beside him, wasn't anywhere even close to winning the fight, and was like,
flashed well, right when he was about to die.
Guess I'll try to summon a tower here when I'm at 20%, and that sounds good. You know, like it was really weird. The Victor game, he was just constantly like kind of randomly walking out side lanes and dying. Like he played really poorly, I think, in both their big losses this weekend. But yeah, I mean, I think TSM played great to their credit to come back. I thought it was really impressive that they were able to come back from what I think should have been unwinnable. But Cloud9 gave them those opportunities, right? And didn't have to. Like, I really just was so disappointed when I was casting that game and just thinking, all right, all they're going to do is they're going to go to every objective. They're going to have trap line. They're going to have the gravity field. They're going to set it up. They're going to poke them out. They never once did it. They never once really felt like they were playing to their win condition, which was kind of weird. So I want to pose a little bit of a hot take to you guys and see you guys can argue for or against here. Cloud9 is donezo. Cloud9 is going to collapse just like last summer. You know, they're going to fall apart. They're going to burn out of playoffs. What do you think? Which side do you guys want to take? Who wants to argue for? Who wants to argue against?
Miss me with that one.
I think it's... you could just assign them because, honestly, Kobe, tell me why
Cloud9 is gonna collapse now. Why they're gonna burn out of playoffs?
As you were asking the question, I'm like shaking my head. I'm like, no way, no, not gonna happen. I'm like, okay, yeah. See, that's why I think you have to assign it because I don't think. Mark
yeah, I just did. You're
say.
Assigned.
All right, so happy Monday on here again. Cloud9, they're doomed. It's all gonna come crashing down. You already brought up one of the biggest points here, Azale Perks. He's over the hill. He came to NA to cash out. Everybody was right. You know, me talking about, oh, he's such a competitive player. You know, he wants to be at the top. He's going to take an NA team to win internationally. I was completely wrong. You know, he's actually just come here to relax on the beach. And he's just cashing out. We saw it emerge this weekend already. He's even giving over kills to his buddy Alfari. Like, this is actually ridiculous. Send him up.
He's
with
an inside
kills.
Man for yeah. you.
Hey, you want a big shutdown? I got you. I'll get a bunch of kills, bounty early on. You meet me bottom tower, bro. I'll see you there. It actually seems like Sven is the only one not in the loop on this crashing of Cloud9. You know, he's plugging away on this Caitlyn, doing work, mm-hmm. pushing down towers, earning plates. Then his buddy Vulcan Black Shields himself, lets him get hit with this Nautilus ultimate. Games comes crashing down again. So honestly, the next few steps that are going to happen are going to be the internal strife that starts to brew.
So first it was the G2 vacation. Now
turn
it's
on each other.
Vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, yeah,
all right, that's what
I can't say you've convinced me, Kobe. But it was a valiant Dang effort. Why is this guy not falling then?
Do I even have to go on the other side? I feel like there's not much of a debate. I think that they're still insanely good. Like the way that they attacked that jungle advantage was something that I don't think any of the team in the league would have done quite as aggressively. Going from red side to the enemy team's blue, then he ran right through mid when there's a minion wave pushed in because Perks got forced out of lane, and he just runs straight to the bot Scuttlecrab to kill Spica there with his team. And then continues farming up through his side, but sends Vulcan to the top lane. Like, the way that they actually did all that was really impressive. And then they absolutely mishandled the mid game. Like, it's a regular season game. I bet, I totally can see a way where you're like, all right, we're locked first. And you just kind of, like, ease up on the gas a little bit.
But they're not locked first.
They're not locked first, but they're locked first.
They're only one game up now on two teams.
They locked first. I think that we have seen this enough out of some of these players that, like, I'm not too concerned about, especially Perks, kind of like the leading man, as someone who sometimes has these games where you're like, ooh, I don't know, that didn't look that good. And then, like, playoffs roll around and he's hulking out. So, like, I think that he in particular has earned enough goodwill to kind of have this not going to collapse mentality. And I don't think it'll happen again for that reason.
Yeah.
All right.
I just follow up with some more reasonable doc. I also think that that Fudge is legitimately playing better and improving, and a strength for the team. Blabber is still by all accounts, everybody's top performer, you know, for this team. And I agree with those points, even though he came under some criticism in the Lilia game for not pushing it more. I still think, go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was going to throw in, too, just on the Gragas game. I didn't like his build at all. In a game where you have three pretty much hyper carries, you're not ahead, and you go Proto Belt, Void Staff as your first two items. I don't know, like, why you wouldn't try and provide better frontline for your team in that game when you have no other real frontline. That was a game where you're clearly, like, kind of a front-to-back team fighting team. You're not the Yasuo burst comp that he was the time he did that build previously, and he was super far ahead. I think there's times where he's like, I'm the carry, baby. And it's like, nah, you're not, dog. Like, even if you want to build a Zhonya, it's like, do something to help your Caitlyn Azir have space to play with.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. They've got plenty of damage in the team comp already.
Yeah, I mean, to touch on the, just this is kind of a segue, but, like, you know, touching on the Void Staff build, I feel like people are going random with these, like, Last Whisper second, Void Staff second builds against no MR and armor, and it's starting to become more and more common, and it just seems like, well, I could buy this cheap item here, this seems pretty good. I mean, the items aren't terrible, but I just think that it really is not making sense, especially I'm seeing a lot of marksmen do it against teams that have barely any armor when Phantom Dancer is just, like, so broken right now. I just think it's crazy to see all these Lord Dominic rushes and you know, Void Staff rushes against teams that have barely any MR. It's just become a really weird trend where it's like, yep, in the past, no one was building enough of these things, and now people are just, like, overcompensating in situations where it doesn't even make sense.
I think it's especially, too, a nuance with the Void Staff, with the component being so cheap now, the new little dual thing.
About. Little gem thing.
It's like you have this quick stepping stone that can be reactive. So, like, as soon as you see the extra null magic mantles being slammed down in everybody's inventory, you can react with, you know, a cheap,
the blighting jewel
stepping stone purchase of your own. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the blighting jewel, of course. But it's weird. You know, I was talking Freak about this. Like, I just feel like PD is so overtuned, and we're looking at some of the win rate data on the item, and even the champions now that, like, are supposed to be overpowered with Hurricane still have, like, 3-4% higher win rate with PD. Like, PD is just so broken that it's just the best on literally everything now. Like, it's just such an overpowered item that I think there's literally no marksman you shouldn't be buying it on. The item is just insane at this point. Like, the components and stuff are really, really good. And just the passive with the flat attack speed, like, the amount of attack speed you are actually getting from this item when you get the four attacks in is so insane. Like, I mean, even on champions like Kai'Sa, it's like you're playing Hail of Blades. You're getting these attacks out incredibly quickly, and you're getting 30% bonus attack speed just permanently once you have the four stacks up. Plus, you're getting the move speed on the item, and you can prep it on minions as well. So it's like on Tristana and Kai'Sa and a lot of these champions, it's just so insane. But people don't really seem to be going towards it nearly as much as I think they should.
Yeah, I was drawing a parallel between this and Jax passive, because people always used to underestimate Jax, you know, stacking up his passive, you know, whacking turrets and minions and stuff, and then try and fight him there. Or, like, Aurelia passive is very similar as well. When Aurelia gets up to five stacks, all the top laners are like, oh my god, don't go fight her. And every once in a while you see, like, this unconcerned jungler waddling up to go, you know, have this 1v1, and you're like, don't do it, she's fully stacked, get out of there, man, get out of there. It's like these passives that don't have big visual indicators, you know, from people that either don't play the champions a lot or don't play the lane or something, not used to that. And now that it's like this item has a similar level of power of one of those things is probably going to take people a little time to get used to.
It's like old Rageblade, but it's just so much easier. It's easy to stack up because it's only the four hits, right? So I think PD should be like a second item buy almost 100% of games. I just think it's so broken right now. Of course, there are situations where you really need, you know, to get some pen in there or something, and then it makes sense if you're against, like, a bunch of frontliners and they're all stacking armor, then sure. But I think Phantom Dancer is pretty insane.
I'm with you, man. No, no void staff for Blabber. Build the Phantom Dancer on Gragas.
Exactly. That's what we're trying to do here.
But to
circle back to Cloud9, I mean, I'm not super worried for them completely falling apart or anything, but it did make me a bit nervous, and it did make me reconsider a bit my opinion on them, because I think, you know, coming into this weekend, everyone was like, Cloud9 is so much better than every other team, right? Like, they're by far the best team right now. And that clearly does not seem to be true anymore. You know, they dropped two straight. They're only a game up on TSM on Dig. And I do think that it'll make playoffs, you know, more interesting, because even if they win out, like, they'll finish first if they win out, but they have a much easier strength of schedule compared to some of the other teams, with the exception being Dignitas, which could be pretty exciting. You know, you wouldn't have thought that would be a battle at the top, but who knows?
Yeah. Money down right now, though. Nobody's switching off top two. Nope. Being Cloud9 and honestly, even
TL.
Well, I guess the next discussion is more interesting. Yeah, because
TSM, dude.
TSM, Dignitas, and
TL.
I want to put up you know, Team Liquid in that as well. We have initially, you know, the tier, we've got, you know, 100 Thieves hanging
in
there.
No one's buying what 100 Thieves is selling
anymore. But exactly. You look at 9 and 6 Team Liquid, you look at 9 and 6 100 Thieves, and one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. I mean, we can get to the 9 and 6 teams first if you want to do the 10 and 5 ones. Because I'm hot on TSM, especially with their upcoming strength of schedule being pretty easy for the last weekend. They have a bit of a test in EG, but then they have Immortals and Golden Guardian. So that could be a pretty easy 3-0 week for TSM, whereas Dig has a lot harder of a time. So I think it's actually pretty likely that TSM ends second in the regular season, which is pretty good for them considering how maligned they were at the start of the split, where everyone was just like, this team's dumpster tier, $6 million support. It's like, watch that last game. That's a $6 million support right there in that Nautilus. So I'm all aboard the TSM hype train.
I think they look really good. I do think maybe you're like overselling it a little bit. Because I just think that they have been a bit up and down. You know, it's like they did have a couple good games. But prior to their Cloud9 win, they were still like, what, 3-3 in their last six, right? With losses to Dignitas, to FlyQuest, and then Dignitas again. So, you know, it's not that they're dominating everyone. I think that they have massively improved from the start, and I think they are on the up and up, but I don't think that they're like so perfect right now, you know. And
I can't wait to get in here, because I want to take this to another level. Like, I don't think they're dominating anyone right now. Yeah. Their early game is booty. Like, this is so trash early game. It's so many of these games for TSM, and yes, they do, you know, win all of these games still, right? They're winning most of these games still, coming back in so many of them. But they have made so many of these early game mistakes, causing their you know, early game goal differences and all of these setups for them, you know, dragon setups and stuff like that, to, I think, take away any of that feeling of like domination or crushing or like coming up right behind Cloud9 type of feeling, until this last weekend, where of course Cloud9, you know, dropped a game to them as well as Team Liquid. But yeah, I think that is another thing that TSM specifically, if we're talking about specific, you know, points in game, and not just overall for this team, that they themselves have said multiple times, like, they are not happy with either. You know, we have listened on some of these, you know, post game interviews and stuff as well. Everybody's got eyeballs on that.
I was gonna say, you guys talking about like, oh, they have these issues. What team doesn't? What team do you look at right now and you're like, my God, that team is just,
well, you just
firing
said,
on all cylinders.
I'm all in on TSM. Well, I'm all aboard. You know, like,
I'm all aboard like the hype train. They're gonna finish second.
Okay, I mean, if that's the argument, I guess it just, the way you were selling it was making it sound like, you know, they're the next coming. Like, this is the team that's gonna win it all.
There's so many teams right now who just throw games, and like, yeah. TSM doesn't throw games. That's one thing you say. Maybe they get run over or something, but I think that they have had a lot of lucky Baron Seals. I'll give you that, like, or skilled Baron Seals, depending on how you want to paint it. But I don't know, man. Like, the
see, Azale, the difference is Mark's hype train is just like, a shiny train, wheels are working, you know, it's going to the correct destination. Azale was thinking, hype train is like, there's a party inside, everybody's got shots.
They're about to win MSI. Music,
they got dancers. They're like,
my hype train is they're gonna be top two, they're gonna dodge, you know, a difficult matchup probably in
their
hype train
spot. Is parking at the LCS upper bracket station.
My and probably winning the first round if they, depending on who they grab, which is probably Dignitas. You know, like I'm aboard that. That's a hype train to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
That's an okay train. I mean, by the way, like for TSM fans, if you're not winning, I don't think they're on the hype train with you. I think you're the only passenger.
My own personal hype train. I got to tell you guys, it's pretty cozy in here. I don't need anyone else.
Mark's just sipping coffee in his hype train. Nice smooth ride there all the way to.
I mean, the thing is, like, in terms of good early games, you have Team Liquid and C9, who you could say legitimately have good early games. And 100 Thieves and EG are the next two in terms of goal difference at 15 and, like,
TSM
pretty good objective control stats. But they're trash in the mid to late game right now, like, those two teams. Mm-hmm. And so, like, after that, you know, there's really not that many good early game teams. Like, it's TSM fifth, which with a negative goal difference at 15. So, like, I don't think that there's, like, I mean, yeah.
I see the updated stats right now, at least for Oracle's Elixir, are goal difference at 15 for TSM, positive 20. Nice 20 goal.
Well, that's different than what I'm looking at. I'm looking at negative 199 with updated stats as well.
You guys are not using Oracle's Elixir, then?
We're using the Riot one. Okay. Either way, like, I think TSM has done a pretty good job of figuring out what they want to do in the game, and they've tried to branch out at times. They still make some mistakes. Like, that dig game that they lost, you know, that was tragic, but, like, they still had a pretty dominating lead and then made some really dumb mistakes and didn't contest the Dragon that they should have and stuff like that. They're actually 4-2 over their last six games with some decent wins. Like, they beat TL, they beat C9.
Because they won Cloud9. You know, I was talking about going into that game.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I don't know. I think that they are a pretty good team that I don't think has skill capped either yet. So, like, I could still see improvements. I hope that they don't pull TL or C9 in the first round, because it's actually pretty possible that they do. But if they can dodge them, I actually think that they can have some time to continue to improve.
I think their trajectory has been good. One of my concerns for them for playoffs is, like, I don't like their drafting most of the time. I actually think that, you know, in a lot of the games, they have losing drafts. Like, it feels like pretty consistently. Of course, there are games where they have good drafts, but, you know, I feel like, you know, even looking at the Cloud9 one, it did feel like Cloud9 had advantages in, like, almost every lane. Like, they had priority, like, everywhere. And it didn't end up mattering, to be fair, right? You know, TSM did an incredible job with what they had, but that felt like you were playing from a deficit and had to outplay, you know, when you have all these losing lanes and you win anyway. I do think that is pretty difficult. You know, and it depends just where you're setting the bar, right? If we're just setting the bar at TSM, it's like success. If they just win one round in playoffs and then flame out, then, like, yeah, I think they'll do that. I think they'll do that for sure. But to me, like, success for TSM is winning the championship, right? I think that if you're TL, TSM, or C9, the teams that spent big, it's win or bust, right? Like, if you're not the champion, if you're not MSI, then it was a failure. And that's kind of how I look at it for all three of those teams. And right now, I still feel like I'm more bought in on TL or Cloud9 winning the championship than I am with TSM.
Bobby Azale, if you're not first, you're last.
Yeah, I would push back
for
against
those three
that
teams.
For TSM, I push back a little bit for MSI, just because that they were five new players playing together for the first time, new coach. Like, I know Bjerg's been there for a long time, but, like, they were, of those three teams, the least complete in a lot of ways. And so I would say for TSM, I'd be a little bit more lenient to say, like, hey, continue improving into summer, continue improving into Worlds, and then let's see how you do at Worlds. If you miss Worlds, then yeah, you're a total failure. If you bust your out at Worlds, probably still a failure. But making MSI, I think, is a little less of a necessity for me to consider TSM, you know, a success.
I think you're lenient. This is a 10 straight finals team right here. TSM.
It's a first
now
split
they're dumping all their money in.
Sword Art just came to NA for the first time. Bjerg's first split as a coach.
$6 million support.
I'm looking at individual like plays in game. When they are consistently able to both operate around the very standard, you know, team fight, PoE with control mages lost on Kaisa, you know, front to back style, and they're able to operate off of the Huni split push look that they tried very, you know, concretely last weekend to push with a bunch of the Jace games and stuff. If I see that, you know, that level of consistency and versatility from the team, I think that I'm pretty confident, you know, with them, like you're alluding to, going into summer, you know, racking up, you know, qualification points for Worlds. Because that is definitely the ultimate goal. MSI is great. But I think maybe I'm with Mark. I'm a little bit more lenient on these top, you know, big spenders where I'm like, all right, my final breaking point is like if you don't make Worlds. Like that is where it's like, you know, failure or not. MSI, only one gets to go. Cloud9's got a huge grudge as far as last year not being able to get there. And they probably, you know, stand the most to lose is
Cloud9, I don't even know that I would bet on them. It feels like TL's had their number, right? Like,
are you TL on any hype train? Or are you just
I feel like TL's just gonna win again. You know, like, yes, they haven't been really that good, to be honest, in the regular season, but it feels like when you look at the top teams as far as their competition, it feels like if you think Cloud9 is gonna be up there, TL has been beating them like every time. They 2-0'd them in the regular season. They beat them in lock-in. It feels like they have been a pretty tough nut to crack.
I got a question for you guys. Are you still worried about Tactical?
Yes.
Pretty sure everybody was last weekend.
I think I am still a bit worried about it. I mean, I think it's just the fact that, like, last year I thought he was really, really consistent, and this year I don't. So it's like you don't know what you're going to get as much in any given game, it feels like. And I do think that's a concern in a best of five. If you have a really tight series against TSM or Cloud9 or Dig or whoever, and he does have an off series, then they probably will lose.
Because yeah. I think Lost had a quite a good weekend this weekend for TSM, and there have been some borderline ones there as well.
All right. Well, what about Dig? Because we haven't touched on them yet. They're another 10-5 team. They just keep winning. And they are one of these teams that just seems so much better than like the sum of their parts, right? Like, you know, you look at the names, you look at the individual players, you make your tier lists or whatever preseason, and you're like, all right, this team is not that good. But they have really, I think, improved massively. I don't know if you guys caught the caster intro we did for Ding Toss, where we're comparing Soligo stats from last time he was in the LCS to this time, and Fake Gods from last time to this time. It is night and day. You know, Soligo, last time he played in the LCS, was 0-10 with like barely a 1 KDA. Like he was dealing about half the damage that he's dealing this season. Fake God, you know, has completely flipped the numbers on what his laning stats are. He's putting out way more damage as well. Like, this was a guy who was hard losing lane on average and now is winning lane significantly on average. So, you know, the improvement, I think, for their soul laners has been massive. Neo has been playing really, really well with Aframu. I think Dardock's having the best year of his career. So, you know, I'm on the Ding Toss hype train, not necessarily for winning the championship, but like as far as expectation versus reality, like I place the bar super high for TL, Cloud9, and TSM, and maybe that makes me sound a bit negative on those teams. But I think if I'm an owner or a GM or whatever, and I put millions and millions and millions in my team, I expect to win. If I'm Ding Toss, I already won. I went 10-5 with 5 NA players and probably one of the lowest salaries in the whole league. I'm already the winner.
Yeah, so I think the reason why everybody is so positive on Dignitas is because this is not, in fact, a train. This was not a train to begin with at all. This is a
wheelbarrow.
This is now a party bus, and everybody is just popping off on this party bus.
And they're driving down the rails. They're on the train
bus.
Track.
This is a party bus they made themselves. Like, it just started out as some old-ass Volkswagen, and they're just like, you know what? We're outfitting this sucker with flames. It's got a
machine in there, disco ball.
Yeah, and everybody is just partying out of their minds, and it's not off of, you know, Grey Goose or any top shelf stuff. Like, this is bring your own beer. Everybody's joining the party because everybody who's there is not there because, you know, they're a follower of you know, the top teams. They're a follower of you know, like Dignitas core culture from previously, or like they're a follower of Underdogs getting these big upsets, or they're
fun
a follower
to
of
watch, man.
The
they're
5
a fun
NA.
Team.
Yeah, so like all of these things and all of these individual stories that we've been so hyped about for like Fake God Redemption, Soligo Redemption, Dardock getting all these wins versus TSM, who got rid of him in such a, like, an unceremonious way.
Nobody wants him.
Honestly, like, these stories are exactly what you want in the, like, the wild card meme, you know, coming out of nowhere, bat out of hell here, Dignitas straight to the top. This is the GME squad. This is the squad that everybody's shorting. You know, in preseason, everyone's just like, nah, that's going nowhere. Everybody's shorting. All these hedge funds, all these analysts at the top, everybody judging. They're like, nah.
Does that make us
trash,
the hedge
trash,
funds?
Trash. Yeah, we're the hedge funds. We're shorting Dignitas. We're like, no way. There's no way they're going up there. And the people are rising up. They're all buying in on Dig to the top. And they're peak at rank two.
True.
Yeah, I like that take.
Yeah, true.
I think, like, Neo has been a lot better than anyone would have said.
Yep.
Fake God, Soligo, to your point, like, Dardock and Aphro, I think, are playing on the top end of what you would have predicted. But the rest of the team is actually really good. You know, like, for a team that no one had any expectations for, to your point, when we do our next week's reviewing our power rankings, they're going to be the big embarrassment. They're going to be the big, oops, yeah, got that one wrong.
I think we probably had them like eighth or something.
Yeah. I mean, TSM's probably going to be a little bit higher if they have, you know, what we're predicting to happen for a pretty easy weekend. Dig's got a tough weekend, but even then, I don't really think there's a way that they drop below, like, fifth, which is still three spots higher than we had anything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they 2-0 TSM, which I think is really impressive. And recently, too, right? Both their wins against them were fairly recent. It wasn't like way back when TSM was playing very poorly. You know, they didn't get a win against Cloud9. But I do believe did they take down Liquid at all? No, they haven't actually played Liquid the second time. But they've done okay. You know, they haven't obviously beaten all the top teams, but I think that they've really impressed me. I still don't think that in a best of five, I would be betting on them against those three aforementioned teams, against TL, Cloud9, or TSM. But I hope I'm wrong on that too. I really do. I think that would be incredibly exciting if they could take it to that next level. But I think that it will be difficult for them to do that when teams are preparing specifically for them. I do feel like there are some ways that you could potentially shut them down, you know, in a best of five. Like, their reliance on Dardock, I think, oftentimes in the early game is so big. Like, their early game isn't that big. They rely heavily on team fighting. But I think if you can put Dardock down with, like, pushing lanes with an aggressive jungle pick, get in his face, I think Dignitas tends to play incredibly passively. When Dardock is behind in the early game, you know, he's really the catalyst, I think, for a lot of what is going on for them, even though they are normally behind. So that's something that I would be worried about when you get him up against, you know, Spica, Santorin, Blabber, and the opposing team comes into it with a plan dedicated to pushing lanes and shutting you down and being in your face. I think it gets really, really tough for Dardock to make things happen. And that generally has Dignitas then just sitting back and kind of just waiting for the game to come to them. And against those top teams, if you play like that, I feel like you often just bleed out.
That's why, if you remember at the beginning of the season, Dignitas commits so many resources to defending their jungle. We had like three games in a row where they even have Fake God there, five people defending level one jungle invades for Tig. Aphro move teleporting in on Tom Ketch. You know, everybody.
My lane for Dardock.
Exactly. That's one of the things where, like, this team seems so cohesive. Like, the, you know, the bonds that they have been able to create within this team seem to have formed really quickly. And again, every time you talk to these players, they're always, first thing out of their mouth is how they're going to improve, even on these wins, you know, on the mistakes that they made. Because, to your point, the Dignitas wins are not these clean from start to finish, you know, sanitized victories of League of Legends. They're definitely down there in the mud a lot of the time, and have to go through a lot of mid and late game, you know, hurting points and difficult decisions that they have to work through. So, but they're constantly looking back at those. And that's definitely what you like. They're constantly looking, how do we keep improving? How do we keep up the victories?
All right, down to the 9-win teams then. It sounds like we want to touch on Liquid, I think, mostly. 100 Thieves is up there as well. How are you guys feeling about their chances for these two teams going into playoffs?
Big question I want to pose first for this one. Most interesting debate. As we're grouping 100 Thieves and Team Liquid together, will Demonte come back? What do you think?
I say yes. I don't think that Ryoma has really done anything. I know he had the good Silas game, but it was against Golden Guardians, right? I feel like if I'm 100 Thieves, I'm concerned going into playoffs with Ryoma. It's not even necessarily to like try to blast Ryoma, because I think he's been like fine. He wasn't really at fault for those losses, but at the same time, he didn't really do anything to win those games either. And I just feel like without Demonte, even if you want to criticize them for being more limited in their playstyle, at least they had a playstyle. What is their identity now? I feel like they've completely lost it. And I think that is the biggest problem with 100 Thieves, and why I am not even going near the hype train for 100 Thieves, is just that it's like when you look to lock in, when you look to the early weeks, they played incredibly aggressively in the early game. It was, you know, saving teleports for early dives. It was, you know, pathing towards, you know, top or bot for both jungle and mid, and playing heavily towards these really well executed aggressive dives to snowball the game and push the pace of the game forward. Then playing side lanes out, you know, trying to pull the team apart, you know, playing towards these Galio and TF picks and split pushing and setting up the map after you've already won bot lane with your pushing bot lane, and you've dove a few times. So you've got early dragons. You can like extend the game and not worry about soul, and they could really just kind of peel teams apart by doing that. And I felt like it was so cool to watch that. And now when I watch them, you know, especially with Ryoma may be better on these control mages, but it just feels like they're kind of so passive in the early stages of the game, and it really feels like they're kind of falling back into what 100 Thieves has been in the past, which is more just like a solid team but not amazing. I just feel like playing just kind of like a slow reactive style and not playing it particularly well isn't going to really do anything against these teams, because it just feels like you're then a worse version of TL. A proactive team like Cloud9 will probably run you over. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I don't know about the Ryoma Demonte situation, who's going to get benched or brought back or what, because you know, it's so much about, I was like, what's your vision for the team? Because when Demonte was there, I think you could argue that he was like the worst player on the team, but he was arguably also the most important, because when he was playing well on a lot of those roamers, he keyed a lot of their plays. Like, he was the one TPing from mid lane onto a minion that was, you know, getting shot by the turret. And then like, that was the dive. And then, or his TF was the one ulting in starting plays or whatever it was. And when you remove that, they don't really have someone who seems like they want to be the primary player, like engage or anything. They tried to do that more this weekend with the Lilia for closer, with the Hecarim and the Skarner, but only the Hecarim game looked good in terms of like team fight decision making on like how to start a fight and stuff like that. And even then, that was the Golden Guardians game again, so like it's a little tough to say, you know, like how good are you guys going to play when we go up against the other playoff teams, because they went 0-2 against other playoff teams this weekend. So like I see
Golden
a world
Guardians
even
were awful that game. They did nothing.
Yeah, it was probably one of the worst games of the split for Golden Guardians. So like, I think that there's a world, like FBI is a great team fighter, Someday's a great team fighter. Maybe you put Ryoma and you just say F our initial vision of what our team is, and we just try and become like a scaling team fight team. But like, their coordination right now is just so bad that I don't know why you would have abandoned the other play style for this one. And so I don't like it.
One quick touch, you know, this is something I talked a little bit with Emily and some people, you know, when we were watching the games over the weekend. And I think she talked about it on the desk as well a bit. I don't know if you were there, Mark. But just the idea that they kind of have abandoned this Demonte playstyle, because it's like, okay, he can't play the meta, right? But I feel like instead of trying to expand a champion pool by fitting a player into what is the current meta, you can expand their champion pool within their playstyle, right? Like, you can put them on, you know, other picks of players that are actually succeeding in that role. Like, you can do things like the Sion mid, you can do things like the Rumble mid, like look to Doenby and how he's playing as a player that plays less for lane and more for roaming, more for actually, you know, pressuring side lanes in a lot of cases. There are examples of this in the world, and I think it's something that some of our top teams have really failed to do over the years. I've felt this way with Impact in the past, where it's like, you have the best tank weak side player like maybe top laner in the world, like, or at least one of them, right? Like, he's incredible playing weak side. He's incredible playing all these tanks and team fighters. And it'll be a meta where it's like Ornn's the only tank that's really popular. So like, well, there's only Ornn. I guess got banned. There's no other tanks in the game. It's like, well, actually, there's a ton of other champions you could be playing within that sort of playstyle. And I think that's what I would have rather seen from 100 Thieves, is instead of trying to make Demonte continue playing Azir and Orianna or whatever, if you think he's not good at that, put him on more roaming picks. Play the same style, just with different champions.
I think even with the same champion, Twisted Fate is not dead. Like, and I want to separate these two.
It's just banned against them, though.
These two issues. And it has not been permabanned against them. It has gone through some of these games, and the reason they haven't been picking it is because of the emergence of the Tristana counterpick and counterpicks like Sylas and stuff. I know a lot of people have been very, very worried to play it into those possibilities. And so they haven't put as high priority on it. I want to separate these two issues of Ryoma versus Demonte and the identity crisis of 100 Thieves, because it actually happened before they benched Demonte, where they kind of lost their commitment to that style and that identity. And then it felt like this was an add-on where they're like, okay, we lost this. Now we're trying to make a better situation by putting in Ryoma and kind of further down that path. Whereas I definitely agree that, especially with hindsight, you know, and looking back at how it's turned out, it's super easy to say now that they should have just more hard committed to their strengths rather than trying to cover weaknesses. I think that is often the case, with the highest level of League of Legends play as well, is fully embracing that. And I like the idea you're bringing up of, like, you know, there are good sources in other leagues around the world too, to keep an eye on, to WinBe specifically, like, to be able to draw other inspiration from for ways to go about it. And I honestly think that 100 Thieves will return, make an attempt at least to return to some of these picks and some of these, styles that they were having success on before, because we've already had some results that's, you're like you're saying, you're not going to be able to do front to back, full on control mage, straight up fights versus some of the other top teams that we have, if they also, choose this strategy.
And I feel like, honestly, it's a failure of coaching for a lot of teams when this stuff happens. Like, I've talked to, and this isn't just to blast 100 Thieves over the years. I mentioned the TL example with Impact in the past. There's been a lot of examples where I've talked to players and on teams, and I ask them, like, why aren't you guys playing this, or why aren't you guys playing that, right? And it's like champions that fit within the playstyle that they're doing. And I'm like, well, why'd you change? Like, oh, well, they started banning Ornn, or oh, well, they started banning TF, or they started banning this thing. I'm like, well, what about all these other picks that fit in there too? Why aren't you playing Poppy Top or Malphite into Jace, or why aren't you playing Maokai into AP or whatever? And I would say 90% of the time, the players are like, oh, we hadn't thought of that. No, like, never talked about it, and it's like, to me, that's just like so disappointing when I hear that, is that, people aren't even considering going beyond meta. It's like, oh, well, your pocket pick doesn't work, so the only other champions in the game that you can play now are Azir and Orianna and Syndra, because those are three champions that people play, right? And I feel like you're judging players by this metric sometimes of how well you fit into the box of the meta. And I think that you can be really successful by stepping outside of it. And oftentimes there's champions that are incredibly powerful that aren't meta just because no one is actually putting them forth. Like, I always think of Malzahar when Malzahar got reworked and was so insanely broken, and no one was playing him in pro for so long. And he got multiple nerfs on live because of how broken he was. And then post nerfs, Faker played him one time, and then he went to like 100% presence in pro. And I'm like, this is so stupid. Like, he was even more broken for so long. Like, people just don't try different champions, and it frustrates me to no end.
And I don't want to put it on the coaches, because I have talked to so many coaches that have literally said a same story as you, and they brought this to a player, and the player is like, nah, I'm not playing that trash. That's stupid.
But
and
then the shouldn't they be forcing them at the end? Doesn't the buck stop with the coach?
The next day, it gets played in LCK, and the player comes back and is like, oh, this looks good. I'm down.
There's also another element. It's like, a lot of players that I don't want to be put into a box. It, like, to use your box example of, like, this is who I am. Like, yeah. A lot of people think that they can play every champion in every play style and that they can play whatever's going to be meta at any given point. And they don't want to admit that they don't play the meta things that well. Like, it's like a point of pride to not want to have to say, I'm going to not play the playstyle.
To be like,
I'm just saying, yeah. I'm not arguing.
I hear you both. I hear you both. And it's not 100% of the coaches. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with the coach. You are the boss. The player has to do what you say. Like, that's supposed to be your job is making these decisions, right? So it's like, no, you don't work. Like, you're not playing Aurelia. You're playing Malphite.
Yeah, but so with the mid lane example, let's say for Damante, not everyone's Doinb, dude. Like, not everyone can just bust out 90% of the champions in the league and play them at a pretty high level. So, like, who knows what they did in scrims? Maybe they tried the Rumble mid and it was a disaster. And, like, we don't know what's going on in scrims. And so, like, if you are trying Renekton mid or, like, these different things and it's just not working, you know.
What's harder, though? Sion or Azir, right? Like, he plays set mid. There's all these champions that fit so well in a box.
We don't know what 100 Thieves did in scrims. They could have spent a week and a half trying new champions for Damante. He turbo into every scrim, and then you go, okay, yeah. And your team's like, dude, just put Ryoma in so we can try and get some wins. Like, you don't know. We don't know what's going on.
And if
so
that's
like,
the case, then I agree. Yeah. But
that's all I'm saying is, like,
every time I talk to players about these type of situations, I've never once heard that they like are grinding these weird picks and that's why. No one ever wants to do it. Because even the opponents, and this is just a systemic thing. Even the opponents don't want to play against weird picks. There's so many examples where I'm talking to teams and coaches and players, and they say, oh, yeah, we actually try to play a Nivea mid, or we try to play something that people don't play, and the other team will literally just sprint it down to end the scrim because they don't think it's valuable practice because no one else plays it.
Yeah, I've even heard stuff recently about a couple of the LCS teams doing similar things that have been heavily critiqued by their opponents and complaining about wasting practice time, but can't leak any of those. I did earlier in the discussion. I want to jump back to the little breakpoint and bring up a champion that is extremely similar to your example of Malzahar Azale. Aurelion Sol was so busted. Win rate through the roof in solo queue. And just throughout the world, there were only a handful of players that nobody liked playing this champion, except probably Huhi. And only a handful of players put the time in on this because it was so different on how you have to play. And yet it was so powerful if you did that. And it actually led to some really cool scenarios, you know, where Huhi is this, like, the one associated with this champion, and you get specific target bans and, you know, big games at Worlds where they're beating
level
top teams
Rome.
And all this stuff, and level one roams and all this stuff is really cool. And I love to see that. So that's why I completely agree that when and especially for our region, I want more teams to make hard commitments and really embrace stuff like this, because you get so many points for uniqueness. At the end of the day, this is about entertainment, and you're going to gain a lot of fans if you do hard commit to a style like that. 100 Thieves felt like there was just it was about ready to crash. This huge wave. So many people were fans. Everybody's on Damante train. He's doing great with all his social media stuff. The team is winning so many games. They're all proactive, diving,
cams.
All this stuff. You know, everybody's partying. Like, they're constructing the hype train. And then the meta does shift away, and they have this identity crisis, and that thing, everybody just leaves. or a decent chunk of people kind of jump off the train pretty quickly. Now, again, with hindsight, it is so much easier for us to be like, obviously, this way didn't work out, dumb. like Mark's talking about, maybe in scrims or something, you know, this way definitely worked out way better. You have some sort of data along that route, but it is always a fun conversation and topic, because I feel like this, in some form or another, has come up for us. Many times throughout the year.
This is one of the things I feel most strong about in just like pro play and everything, that people are not making use of so many champions that are really strong that fit the play styles of players, and it is tough. I'm not trying to say that it's an easy solve. you know, and that it's like, oh, of course, you know, if you're the coach, you just tell them to play and then they're all happy to do it, because some players won't want to do it or they'll refuse. And then you have to worry about, you know, the social dynamic, or are they going to be tilted when they go into the game if they're on a pick that they didn't want, and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, I still do think that the buck stops with the coaching staff. You have to be able to build up that trust, or find some way to be able to get the players on the picks that you think are best. But I also do think that there's almost like a stigma around certain champions where it's like they're like noob champs. You know, it's like playing tanks is for noobs, right? And like, you know, Malzahar, point and click CC, that's a noob champ too, right? You know, there's some of these champions that I feel like...
Hair dog people, champ is popular.
Yeah, dog champ, exactly. Where people don't want to play them and practice them because there's just like this like negative stigma about those champions, and how they're like low skill champions. And I think sometimes that honestly is keeping people away from really good picks, where it's like, at the end of the day, your job is to win. Like, you know, you should play whatever you think is strongest, whether it's, you know, extremely skillful or not, who cares?
Reminds me of Crown Malzahar.
Yeah.
Sadness.
World champion Crown. World
champion and still
mm-hmm.
no credit.
Disrespected.
All right, well, let's move on to the deep depths.
Well, we haven't touched on TL really yet, to be honest.
Oh, well, yeah, we haven't gone specifically only on them, but we have had them as a fringe topic in like a lot of these other teams we've been discussing. Yeah. So I do feel like we've involved them, but let's focus in on specifically them. And we brought up the tactical as one of the points. I think that's probably one that most people are you know, had their eyes on after a lot of those picks in mid game, especially not even this previous weekend, but the one before, where they're leading to a lot of you know, mid game falters here for Team Liquid. But we did see some sparks of a return. As funny as it is, in the CLG game when I saw Tactical and Core JJ get the first blood bottom, I was like, boom! They're back, Team Liquid. Remember Lock-In? They're bottom lane, 2v2 killing everybody by 3 minutes. They did it again, and they even did it versus CLG, the First Blood Gods. Holy moly. And you have this giant reversal.
And they're still ruining First Blood stats even now, like, because they have made it so that getting First Blood made you a losing team statistically. You know, it was like 44% win rate with First Blood. And now, even when they don't get First Blood, they then win that game and they continue to drive it down. I don't know what they have against trying to make that stat look good. But Team Liquid, I think I'm still a little sussed on. It doesn't feel like we know the potential of this team. We've seen the potential of this team. But it doesn't feel like all their gears have been clicking at the same time. Like, there's always something going wrong, whether it's individual mistakes or, like, this is the game where they don't play well as a team. Like, it's always one thing or another, it feels like, over the course of a weekend. They will have individually good games. But even, like, the C9 game that they won, where everyone's like, oh, my God, that was incredible by Alfari. They were behind that game off some bad skirmishes in the bot lane and stuff. And, like, it's been a... Go ahead.
Just for that one, I did get a feeling during the Cloud9 Team Liquid game that more of the mistakes were forced errors in this game, where one team, you know, would make some really good plays and then the other team would make good reactions, where it's the correct decision and best in this scenario that you were put into by the other team, which is definitely different from some of the other examples that we have had in the last couple of weekends, where there are, you know, unforced errors or poor decisions being made. And I just kind of want to interject that little bit, because I think it is an important nuance, where some of these ones, and we're talking about, you know, gold leads going back and forth, or they were behind and stuff like this happening. I did feel like there was really good back and forth, and the Team Liquid Cloud9 rivalry is probably my favorite now, with them going back and forth on social media, memeing each other after for all the things too, where you know, Core JJ is going after Sven, trying to make fun of him, and then Sven's answering with the backdoor you know, about playoffs you know, pictures as well. It's got some good history to it already, and it does still, you know, seem to be building to some good future peaks.
Some of the Jensen tweets before the CLG game were also absolutely hilarious.
After.
And after, they got our first three when we get into the split before they lost to CLG. And then he quote tweets himself and says, "What a dumbass." Yep. And then Smoothie quote tweets him his 3-0 week thing and says, better luck next time. And Jensen just says, "GG's, man, well played. Looking forward to a potential rematch in playoffs when they're already eliminated from playoffs." I just thought that was like so funny.
I hope people don't go after TL for this, like for their players like memeing on Twitter.
It's
this
fantastic.
Is the stuff that like I miss this stuff. It's so funny when
you
see
like
it. He fires back after like you take your L and you're like, no, I'm not backing down. F you, Smoothie. F you, like world for making fun of us. I hope no one actually like looks at that and be like, these players need to buckle down and focus in their scrims, like, because that's just the worst mentality to have.
Yeah. Speaking of that, and this is a real tangent, but I saw some flack. I want to say it was to EDG. I could have a team wrong, and I apologize if I do. But essentially, there was a lot of social media backlash towards the coaching staff because in the background of I think it was a player's stream, they heard that the coaches were talking about like completing one of the in-game events, like, you know, like that, you know how there's like the events with missions
and stuff
like that. So, and essentially that they lost the next day, and then they're like, the coaches were fucking doing this, and a lot of people play A-ramps to complete those missions fast, so they should have been coaching and working, and they shouldn't have been doing that. And people were getting apparently really mad at the coaching staff for basically having played some League of Legends for fun. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I will say that this was an easy weekend for them, though. They beat Golden Guardians pretty handily. Mm-hmm. The C9 game, you know, it's a tough opponent. I don't mind it being a little back and forth where one team makes a good play, you make a good play kind of situation. But then the CLG loss makes it still hard for me to get aboard the hype train 100% with this team. Like, I know they're really good. I know best of fives, they're probably going to, like, make a run in playoffs. I'm not worried about that. But it's just hard right now to, you know, kind of just close your eyes and be like, wake me up when playoffs are here. I don't want to see any of this.
I think they'll probably 3-0 there last weekend. I think there's a good chance. I mean, they were on a 4-game winning streak coming into the CLG game. It's hilarious because everyone was like pointing towards it as the trap game, and then it was the trap game. They actually lost. But chances are, I still think they'll probably 3-0 next weekend. I think that they have, you know, a really good shot of doing that. And if they actually do that, then you're going in winning 7 of your last 8, right? They have Dignitas on Friday. They have EG on Saturday, and their final game will be 100 Thieves. And I honestly think that they're better than all three of those teams. I wouldn't be shocked to see them, you know, finish strong. And in that case, I would be feeling pretty confident. I think my confidence would be shaken if they start picking up some more losses in this final weekend, but they've always been really good in BO5.
Theoretically playoff bound teams that they have to play against. And so it is a good kind of stress test heading into playoffs for them.
All right. Well, on the button here, last one currently in playoffs is Evil Geniuses. They have been getting a little bit risky and definitely some shaky games, especially Svenskeren. Oh my goodness. That just popped in my head. A lot of, you know, questionable attempts early on in the jungle, the Mundo game.
And the Hecarim game.
The Hecarim game as well, going for the crab super early. You know, one of them, I remember specifically, well, the Mundo game, nobody was coming. Nobody had pushed up lanes to support him. Nothing to save that one. But the Hecarim game, you know, he has mid priority and mid laners coming up. But I believe it was Fate
that
God.
That one was indefensible,
comes,
man. That one, there's no
river.
Way.
No, I don't want to point this out because his mid laner, you know, push up the wave and it's like Orianna or something, right? It's starting to walk up and I'm like, oh, that must be the communication that's going on right now. Because if you think about it, that's like, there's no way if they're looking at Fate God, they're looking at, you know, the situation right in front of them that they go for this. And I think that's why I think it was poor communication within the team.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing I could come up with is that mid was like, yo, he's backing. I just pushed.
I don't give
a pass. And then top says nothing. All right.
I don't even care what your mid laner is saying. If you can't identify that that's a bad situation, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
you got to just ignore
that
him.
That was horrible. He had already used Ghost. So, like, to set the stage a bit more, he used his Ghost. Dardoch had his flash. You know, Fate God had his flash. He literally started fighting him on the spire, got to 40% HP while Darduk is still 100%, literally full HP, backs off, then begins to fight him again at 40% HP into 100% HP with Fake God closer than the Orianna is. I don't care what Orianna is saying. There's no world in which that makes sense. It just made it blew my mind. It actually was flabbergasted when I was casting that game. I could not believe it. That was horrible.
You go first, Kobe.
Horrible.
I'm going to pose a question off this.
Okay, so I'll go right before you pose that question. If that was the only mistake Sven Skare made that game, I'd just be like, okay, EG kind of being idiots doing their kind of like occasional EG int, whatever. But the later stuff in the game was still terrible. Like when he didn't want to ult out of the situation, ran through the Victor field, got stunned, QSSs, and then he's right next to Skarner, who's like, yes, please, and then ults him right back in and kills him. Like, there were a number of really boneheaded plays out of this team. And that's why, like, you know, it's not just the one thing ever. That, at least this weekend, it wasn't like, oh, they made one stupid play, ha ha ha.
Who would you rather see in playoffs right now, EG or Immortals? Because Immortals are one game behind them. They're probably the team that would take their spot. Okay. Azale?
EG's fun all the time, yeah. Baby. Immortals sometimes have those slow games. You know, they're playing this controlled style. EG is going to be a blast in playoffs no matter what.
Yeah, like getting mad at some of these plays, Mark. You're like, oh, just okay, tower diving again? right after he just got executed?
I'm never more alive than when I'm angry.
I mean, if you're talking about entertainment value, I big agree. I think that EG will do some stuff. You know, they'll get in there. They'll show you a game for sure. Might not be a good one, but they're going to scrap. So I think EG is more fun. I also would say that, like, despite, you know, I'm obviously we're going pretty hard on a couple small plays. I mean, but it was the Mundo game was horrible too, where he's just like invading with no one around him and dying, yeah. You know, knowing that people are missing. Sometimes he was invading, like, he invaded the enemy Raptors with his mid lane under their own turret, you know, and no vision on anyone else, and then died. It was like, wait, what is happening here? This is some super greedy solo queue stuff. But I will say at the very least, the highs for EG are still very high, right? So you could go into playoffs and put EG up against I don't even care who, and I'd be like, hey, you know, maybe they could upset them, right? You know, maybe that could happen. I don't feel that way with Immortals, whereas I do think that if EG plays at their top level, maybe they could take down anyone, right? You know, there's at least a possibility of them going for a big upset or giving us some entertaining series. So, you know, I'm kind of on board with Mark.
I would say I've really liked specifically Ray's and Destiny, both from the bottom lane. You know, throwing down the Vayne pick into another Mundo, but also the Tristana. Was so fun to watch him just straight up rocket jumping on people for solo kills, getting the reset, going out. You know, Destiny working really well with him. That you know, that pairing meeting back up after so long playing together many years ago in Australia. I think that's been really exciting. As if we're talking about entertainment value as well to watch for this team. So, you know, good luck to them. Do you guys want to do finish up quick hits? I'd say for the teams that are already eliminated, biggest improvements for me is of course going to be CLG. And I pulled the I don't know if you saw the CLG intro, but I pulled the Tafo tweet from earlier in the week where he's talking about nobody on CLG taking a single day off. They're all working through you know, the entire weekend, plus doing night blocks and putting in so much work to improve because they know you know, the record goes all the way through summer, through four worlds. And then seeing the improvements literally the next day of Pobelter, Lucian, split push, dead, to Smoothies hovering him. They have vision. They're backing off at correct timings. They're even coordinating, you know, Finn teleport, you know, split pushing both sides at the same time, setting up for the dragons better, like all of this stuff. It was like, whoa, a rush after one day, you know, compared to how bumpy the spring split has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was just going to say that I'm looking forward to this team in summer a little bit. Like, I don't think that they are going to – I still don't think they're going to go to Worlds, but, like, they play some pretty interesting games. They're pretty fun. They're usually trying champs out. Like, their drafts are interesting. Like, they're overall a pretty fun team to watch. It was just tragic that they had to start 1-10 or whatever it was that they kind of had as their opening record. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3-3 with Poulter, 1-8 without.
Yeah, so it was real rough. I'm excited to see what they can do in summer, and it's good to hear that they're grind lording it out.
Yeah, I mean the improvements have been big, but yeah, I still think it's like maybe they're a 50-50 team, right? You know, I think that 3-3 with Poulter may be somewhat indicative. It's not like everything has been perfect since they have got them all together. You know, I hope they can continue to improve. But you know, it has been nice to see that from them. Golden Guardians, I will say, you know, especially after the Enero interview talking about how like he wants them to play to win, he doesn't really care if they lose and stuff. I was like, that's cool, I agree. And then they picked Pantheon and did nothing the entire game, and I was like, that's cool.
Yo, he had some sick trades, level 1, 2, and 3 though.
Yeah, and then he ulted for the first time at 22 minutes. And his jungler never ganked the Pantheon lane again for both games that they played it. So I was pretty disappointed about that.
Alrighty then. That brings us to our Honda MVP section. Thank you, Honda, as always. With 1 week left, we have pretty much everybody probably still on board with the Blabber train. But do you have any party bus contenders poking their heads up here for MVP?
There's one that you were heavily foreshadowing with the party bus. Let me, you know, entice you guys on. If Dignitas, you know, rips off 3-0, C9 okay. fumbles a little bit.
Okay.
Dig finishes first somehow.
Okay.
Is there any way where you start looking at a player from Dig?
Yeah.
If the somehow is Neo. Hard carrying, picking Vayne, picking Quinn, AD carry, you know, playing the map, split pushing, coming in, zooming in. You know, he actually had back-to-back over 15 kill games. So honestly, like if we see some like crazy sick AD carry stuff out of Neo might be one. I think, and I've been so hyped for Fake God, and you know, I've probably been calling him Faker God or Real God more than Fake God recently in the games because of a lot of these big plays he's been making. But again, part of the reason that I'm so hyped for him is because we did have a lower bar set previously, and Blabber is just still like so freaking good for so long. It's MVP of the entire split. It's really hard to you know, accrue enough power to overtake Blabber for my MVP vote right now, but I'd probably put Neo and Fake God for Dignitas. You know,
Fake God, really?
Yeah.
So Fake God, I could never get behind because I just can't see. Like everyone agrees, Alfari is the best top laner in the league. Doesn't even feel like a question. So I can't see ever putting you know another top laner up for MVP if it's not Alfari. It's kind of like how I look at it. It's like if you're not the best in your role,
Liquid? I'm like, oh, maybe there's a hope. Maybe they play Team Liquid.
If you're,
oh,
if you're not the best in your role, you can't be the MVP. Is kind of how I feel about it. But
what if dumpster fires Alfari in their final game?
Maybe
you're just gonna be like, ah, it's one game. Nah,
it's one game. If I was gonna do a Dignitas member, it would maybe be Afro, or potentially, you know, Dardock. You know, I think Afro has been really good all year. You know, I do think that also, like, it's worth considering these players if they really got first. Like, that is incredible, right? Like, from where you were expected to go from to where you ended up, like, of course, the players were heavily underrated. And, you know, then at that point, we have to reevaluate, like, how good actually are they? How well did they play during this year? And maybe we have to change some of those preconceived notions because, I think despite the fact that like Vulcan and Corja J are clearly like more talented overall or whatever, it's like, hey, if you 3-0 that final weekend, if Afro goes big in those games, like maybe he had a better split. Maybe he's deserving of the MVP. I don't know. I think it's a long shot that anyone from Dignitas gets MVP. But I think they deserve to be in the conversation for sure. If they finish first, I mean, if they 3-0 the last weekend, they definitely deserve to be in the conversation. What about you, Mark?
Oh well, yeah, I'm on the same page. I don't think Neo maybe for Fake God I couldn't get on board with it. I think Afro might be the closest, or Dardock if one of them has like super pop off weekends while making this run, because if Blabber has like a fall from grace, maybe you can sneak in. But support also has felt more up in the air than I would have thought going into the split. I would have thought Core JJ easy number 1, Vulcan easy number 2, Huyen easy number 3, but Core JJ has been fine, but not like the God tier, clearly the best player in the LCS by a country mile that he kind of was in the lock-in tournament.
Yep.
Huhi has been less proactive. Vulcan's been fine. I don't have any issues with Vulcan, honestly. I think he has been the best support in the league. But, you know, he had a rough game against TSM, so we'll have to see. You know, and Afro has probably been, like you're saying, the biggest key for this team's success.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
All right, then. Quick fantasy update. Azale's out. I'm in the loser's bracket, and Mark has a chance. Good luck, Mark.
Well, the games are over. I mean, I don't think they've been tabulated, but I have lost to Freak.
Okay.
So none of us have a chance.
Well, so none of us have a chance.
Bad luck, Mark, then. All right. Fantasy
was
is
close.
Sick.
Yeah, I was really close. Freak, I still lost in base points, and then Freak had a better bands than me and stuff. So lost by a pretty large spread because of that. But
to be honest with you, real quick. I didn't realize that the regular season ended after 4 weeks because almost everyone in our league was 2-2. There was like a couple 3-1s, maybe 2-1. I don't know. And then LS and I both finished 1-3. I lost my last 2 weeks by like 10 points. And then I actually... Kobe's excited. I didn't even get to go in playoffs. LS and I didn't even get to go in playoffs. I didn't realize it worked like that. And then if you're not top four from the regular season, you don't even have a chance to win. It's because they go into the upper bracket. So you're in the loser's bracket, Kobe. You won your loser's
bracket.
I know. I want my wood trophy here, okay, though? Because I deserve that sucker. I lost in base points to Emily by... 40 something base points, almost 50 base points less than her. But I gained a shit ton of points with my pick and cut off a bunch of points from her with the bands to get the victory.
Kobe.
Woo!
I have an idea.
Wood five,
next
baby.
Next split when we do fantasy, I'll handle the drafting and you handle the pick bands every split or every game. Because you're a monster at pick bands.
Okay, let's
I had some good raw points. I just didn't know what the hell I was doing with bands.
Okay,
yeah,
we'll team up.
Maybe we can come up with some awards, you know? You can get, like, there could be, like, a trophy for the most points banned and stuff. We could add that for next split, Kobe.
Yeah, I don't want to do a 10-team league again if we do it again. So I'd be down to just team up, and then we have one less spot, and we can...
So it's a 9-team league. Okay, all right, perfect.
I'm
just kidding.
Better than 10. Better than 10, baby.
That's true, yes. At least you can make some roster swaps. But fantasy, pretty fun overall. I'm excited to do it again next time. We'll see how that one does go, and we'll let you guys know who wins in the end. It's probably going to be the Tigress, I assume, because she's been slamming everyone. All right, we got some anchor questions here. First one comes from Spencer. What do you got for us, Spencer?
Assassins are currently dominating and very popular in solo queue meta, whereas it's only basically control mages in pro play. Will assassins ever make a comeback to pro play, or will we just never see them on the stage again? And I know we see Yone, but it's a very rare case. We never really see a melee assassin versus assassin matchup.
My quick thought is that it's possible. The reason that they stay out of the meta generally is that their wave clear isn't as good, right? And that's the simple reason, is that in pro play, it's mostly just about pushing waves, and control mages push waves better than the assassins. If you have Zed and he's locked under his turret the whole game, it's hard for him to do a lot. I think also, honestly, Verdant Barrier and Seekers being so good right now hurts them a lot too, because anytime I'm playing mid lane and playing against the Blanker Zed or whatever, I just get one of those. I'm like, well, I'm kind of chilling.
Yeah. Plus, AD carries are so strong right now. A lot of people are starting to build around protecting the AD carries. And if you have to play assassins into a bunch of healing, shielding, or protecting, peeling types of champions, then it's super hard. I will say there are specific examples where assassin champions, I'm always ready to see them come back in pro play, because Akali with the kit, if she's good, she'll come back. Akali always going to be viable. You know, split pushing 1-3-1 types of champions. Echo, if you truly to the tag, it has an assassin tag on him, has a lot more outs. One of the things for pro play is a lot of the assassins that are super hard commit in assassins are almost never played, because you don't have the outplay potential. But, you know, the ones that do have possibilities of doing it with a less risky style, you know, Echo ultimate or all the move speed from the passive, those types of things can make them viable. And I will say, I have heard inklings of Talon popping his head up with the current state of how strong he is, and being used, at least tested by some LCS teams. So I'm hoping that we get to see him. I'm not, you know, super hopeful that we actually will see him, but I want him. I want to.
Yeah. I think Assassin versus Assassin is also just such volatile matchups that usually you just don't want to opt into it. If you're taking the slightly losing end of that matchup, I don't think there's that many 50-50, truly 50-50 Assassin matchups. I don't think players want to opt into those often.
No one blinds so Assassins. It's only counterpick.
Right, exactly. So, like, you wouldn't blind... You know, I mean, there's some that maybe you can and have done the fast, like the Akali and stuff like that, and then people play LeBlanc into it, which is kind of Assassin-Assassin. You might get some stuff like that where one's broken and another Assassin has a good matchup into it. But other than that, not really. But I still think we see a fair amount of them. We've seen Sylas, Yone, Yasuo, Echo, the split. Yeah, we've seen a handful.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Sylas an Assassin, though. But we do get some. I agree.
Melee carry, whatever.
Yeah, but hopefully we'll get more. It can be pretty fun to watch for sure. Thank you for that question. We got another one here. This one comes from Rohan Chitness. Chitness? I don't know.
Hi, guys. Long-time listener. Love the show. My question is, if you and your friends put together a team, a 5 pre-made, that had to face off against an LCS team, a top LCS team, on stage conditions, but with a complete map hack so you can see the spectator mode map, what's the lowest rank that you think you and your friends would have to be in order to beat that LCS team? Thank you.
Challenger still.
Yeah.
If you're saying, when you say top LCS team, it's like there's pro teams that could beat other pro teams when they were map hacking, 100%. Yeah. Right? Like I still would pick Damwon over like 95% of the pro teams
LCS
in the world.
Team.
Okay, well,
top LCS.
So Cloud9, you're still going to get slammed in lane so hard, or Team Liquid, you're still going to get slammed in lane so bad. Like, you think that me as someone who's, you know, like a diamond top laner or whatever, is going to do well against Alfari in lane? Like, it doesn't matter if I can see where Santorin is, because Alfari is going to solo kill me 300 times.
Yeah. And the thing is,
I like it.
Yeah, 300 times.
Even
I was being generous to myself. I was trying to keep it low.
assuming that Team Liquid also, we're going with Team Liquid here, assuming that they know that you're playing with map hacks on, it's not like they don't know this.
Yeah.
I would, like, Santorin's just going to pick a power farming Karthus jungler and PvE you, so he doesn't have to worry about getting counter ganked. And then when you get to team fights, TL will play safe and they'll, like, okay, well, they have map hacks on us, so just, like, play the lanes well. A little careful, and then, like, team fights come around. What are you gonna do? It doesn't matter. You have ward. They have wards. They see everything.
Here's my rebuttal. All right, we get map hacks, and they get Nocturne ult the whole time. Now we can beat them.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, pretty easy.
Yeah,
because then they can't play
that.
The game. I would also say, I just think that, like, drafting is such a big part of it, right? Where it's like, if they had to blind pick all their champions and stuff, and we got map packs, then I think it's a different story. Because I think that it's like, you know, blind picking against Alfari equals me actually just getting chain solo killed the whole game. Me getting counter pick doesn't equal me doing well, but it means I'm not just going to chain die, right? So then you can maybe play the game a bit. But it's an interesting question, but I just think, especially when you signify top, like the best players, their laning is too good. You can't play the game if you're lower ranked. Cool question, though. Thank you very much for that one. We got a Twitter question here. This one comes from Glenn, and he says, after TL's near-perfect game versus Golden Guardians, do you think that their style of play is acceptable? The game was very impressive, but gaining advantages off of lanes and keeping control of the game off pure talent hasn't worked internationally.
So I don't think Team Liquid have used the same style in all of their games, and specifically against Golden Guardians, I think that's perfectly acceptable for that game. I think Team Liquid have already proven this year many times over that they are not going to default into that older style that we've already seen not work internationally. GoreJJ has been super outspoken, super proactive, and even though they've run into problems recently, I have no qualms with Team Liquid or another one of our top teams using that against some of the weaker opponents, because there's a reason why we've been so consistent internationally with beating wildcard teams actually I want to get into a little trouble there with definitely some of the times throughout history, but especially if, you know, if we look at, you know, last year and stuff like that, I think
all time we have a pretty insane win rate versus.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely have. There's definitely a lot of embarrassing examples, but
the only thing I would say is also like just like the generic definition of gaining advantage off lanes and keeping control of the game off pure talent hasn't worked internationally. Like if you're saying just for TL or something, maybe, but like, isn't that kind of how IG won Worlds? Like, you know, just by being better at laning than everyone and controlling the game from that. Like that's such a generic kind of question or definition, right? If you mean more like playing passively the whole game, I think that's usually more what our top teams are criticized for. It's just expecting they'll win lanes and just sitting back all the time and bleeding out. Like that's more what TSM and TL have been criticized for. But I do think that there are teams that are just so talented laning wise that they can create advantages like that. All right, we got one last question here. This one comes from Vincent Coachman, and he says, with the ever growing pool of S tier champions in each role at the competitive level, do you think we'll see teams with different styles of play and different metas rather than the same meta across the board this season?
Mark's squinting, so I'll go. Yeah.
Yes. I was going to say, is there a growing pool of S tier champions? Is that a thing?
I mean, it always fluctuates with each patch. You know, we have some come in, some drop out. For right now too, I think there are some that are not being utilized super effectively, but honestly, we always have lots of changes in the meta overall when we have international competition. We see them converge. Do you see different styles of players? Oh, so this is not international targeted question.
No.
This is just this season. And I think that we already
We do have teams with different
play. We have teams with different play styles already. And I'd say one of the ones that 100 Thieves kind of converting to the more widely accepted style is probably an example of that he's kind of trying to use here. And I actually think that 100 Thieves after not finding success converting will try and branch out once again and re-embrace that diversity. So
I would say a good example is just look at C9's mid-champ pool to TSM's mid-champ pool. It's like, we talked about this on the analyst desk, but it's like, okay, you play Syndra, Victor, Azir, and it's basically it with a Corki game or two for PoE. And on the flip side, there's a ton of melee champions for
Perks.
He's playing LeBlanc. He's playing like all these different things. Trist mid. Like there's clearly different options available in how you structure your team comps and stuff still. And I don't think like every single one of those champs for anyone's really S tier necessarily. I think maybe you could argue PoE's champ pool is a little bit more aligned with the global meta of what people recognize as strong. But like Azir is not permaban anywhere. You know, like he's not an S tier champ, I would even say. He's just the most default played champion pretty much anytime he's meta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's players that also define the styles for their team, right? TL has played way more split push and side lane stuff this year than they ever have before because they have Alfari instead of Impact, right? So I do think that there are teams with different styles, and I hope that we continue to see, you know, more variation with that. I think it's a lot of fun to watch when all the teams have, you know, their different styles. But that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you, Honda, for making this episode possible. And remember, you can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm. Sub to the new YouTube, youtube.com/LCS, where the dive will go live each week, 5 a.m. PST on Tuesdays. You can also send us all your questions using the hashtag DiveLOL on Twitter. Happy Tuesday, yep.
Every Tuesday.
You can send us the voice messages on anchor.fm. And if you want, you can leave us those Apple Podcast reviews. We read some last week. If you leave some funny ones, maybe you'll see it read on the show. We'll see you guys next week.